This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back to The Junks. We're presented by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. We head out now to the BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. We're joined by Jesse Dougherty, covers the Washington Nationals for the Washington Post. Jesse, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
We are doing well. I'm looking at Twitter. I'm looking at...
How do you think Mike Rizzo's doing?
Yeah, he's a busy man, I'm guessing. I'm looking at Chelsea James's Twitter. She tweeted this last night, about 15 hours ago, a picture of you on the dugout steps with Juan Soto. How did that conversation go? What was his mood like heading into last night's game where he hit a homer off of Max Scherzer, his former teammate?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, a lot of people asked about that photo. Thanks, Chelsea.
Did you get permission?
No, right? Well, you think your colleagues sell you out like that? What's going on? No, I was actually just asking like a very innocuous detail. Honestly, if I even went into it, people would say that's what you guys do with your job and your access to these athletes. But we've been talking to him pretty much nonstop for the last week, 2 weeks, and he even talked post game last night. I'd say as far as mood, like, he's antsy. I think he's really excited for 6:01 p.m. tonight. He said he wants to remain in Washington even up to last night, saying he's comfortable where he is. But I think more than anything, he wants to know where he's playing tomorrow. So, but overall, I mean, really impressed and taken back, frankly, by how measured and how kind and how sort of jovial and funny he's been throughout all this, because he's just been getting pelted with attention, as you can imagine.
What's the rule on when you have to enter the lineup in?
Interesting. There really isn't. It's honestly okay. More, you know, respect to your opponent type deal, because you're trying to help them get their pitchers ready or their scouting reports. So there's sometimes some gamesmanship if you try and hold out because the guy's hurt, but there isn't a specific time. Okay. In theory, you can walk it up to home plate at the beginning of the game.
But usually they'll do it, what, a couple hours before the game, an hour before the game, first pitch?
Yeah, we get in the clubhouse around 3 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game. It usually comes out about halfway through that window, so 3:30.
Okay.
It's usually a good time.
All right.
So, Jesse, in that pick, Juan Soto is wearing a T-shirt with a picture of his teammate, Robles, wearing the clown nose. And I know that when he put the clown nose on, that didn't go over well with Davey and you know, the front office. And now a bunch of the players are wearing that T-shirt in pregame warmups. How did that fly yesterday? What was the reaction there?
Yeah, I don't think the manager loved that. I think that, you know, to some degree, the players got to be goofy and have to do things on their own. I think, on the other hand, probably could read the room a bit better when, if it's something on the fringes where the manager didn't really react or say, that's funny, or I don't love it. But he was pretty forceful in his response to that. He was pretty much, there was a lot of gray area on how he felt. So let's just say I was a bit surprised to see that box of T-shirts. And I'm not positive how long they'll stick around, but they certainly made their rounds in batting practice yesterday. And I guess if I were a teammate, I would take one, you know, like, guys were not going to pass up an opportunity for that T-shirt, but I don't know if it was the smartest move on the player's part there.
Talking to Jesse Dougherty, covers the Nationals for the Washington Post, has a book called Buzzsaw about when they won it all with Juan Soto on the cover. Do you find him to be okay with the fact if he gets traded, is he going to be okay with it? Does he understand? Like, he's been a National his entire career and part of this organization. What is kind of his feelings about leaving the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think I thought a lot about this because on one hand, it is home and it's his only baseball home he's known. And he, you know, he has this, I'm sure he has his spots and his family knows how to get here and they probably have their routine when they land on the plane and all those things, right? I mean, it's like, you know, there's a routine to this, there's a rhythm. And but at the same time, like, I think he's always been, and we know this, he's always discussed with his agent, he's always discussed even publicly, a interest, a willingness to go to free agency and hold out, as we've seen, make big bets on yourself to go to free agency. So with that said, like, he has not been someone who sat at his locker day after day and thought, wow, I can't wait to sign my big deal here and stay. Doesn't mean he wouldn't do that if the numbers were right, but he's always been comfortable with, in 2024, I'm going to test the market. So if you know that your life's going to change and you're going to pick up and leave potentially and you're going to change cities and move and learn a new organization in 2 years, I don't know if there's a huge difference between that and doing it now and then getting to play on a contender. Because what we know about him is that he hasn't come up through a rebuild. He hasn't come up through an Orioles or a Pirates situation. He came up winning. And there's a massive difference that between what's going on now and what he had early on, which was having Bryce next to him, having Zim next to him, winning games, frankly, going to the World Series. So I think that would be a welcome change. I'm not saying he's clamoring. He's not sprinting out the door. He's not saying goodbye to no one. But yeah. I don't know if it would be the worst thing for him to land somewhere where he can, you know, where he can actually establish himself as a winner again.
Yeah, I was going to say, the competitor in him doesn't want to lose 104 games. He wants to go to the postseason and have a chance to win a World Series. He knows how that feels. So I would agree. I would think he would want the change this year. And he can always, you know, it's always a possibility that he can come back. That's usually rare, but he could always come back. But this year, I would think, yeah, I want to get somewhere where I'm playing in front of full stadiums and I'm going to go to the postseason. So getting back to the potential trade partners, you're hearing the same teams that everybody's hearing, right? You're hearing Pods, Cards, Dodgers, maybe a sleeper team. Who do you think the leader in the clubhouse is?
Yeah, I'm going to I'll parrot my colleague Barry Sherluga's reporting this morning, which was that he tweeted that as the deadline approaches, there's a growing sense the Padres are the most likely landing spot for Juan Soto, and in the twist, perhaps Josh Bell too. Multiple people have heard there's momentum in those talks. I can hop on that and say I've heard that as well, and that while there is that sort of group of three that's been rumored, which is Padres, Cardinals, Dodgers, as of this morning, with things obviously can always be fluid, as of this morning, what we're hearing among reporters at the Washington Post and what we can, you know, put out publicly is that there is momentum with the Padres. It's certainly a name that keeps coming up, and we'll see. Obviously, if things can change, and last year with, you know, the Max Scherzer trade that never was with the Padres is a good example that, you know, maybe the Dodgers or someone else gets, you know, emboldened to say, we're going to up our return then because we don't want that to happen. But that's the sense this morning, at least, with hours to go until the deadline.
Jesse, we're talking to Jesse Dougherty from the Washington Post, covers the Nationals. I'm wondering, you know, you're there day to day. You've been covering the team. You wrote a book about them winning the World Series. When they traded away Max and Trey last year, did you know that this season would be this bad?
No. I didn't know it would be this bad. And I also think I didn't even know it would be this bad in March. Because what I didn't, I mean, the crazy thing is that, like, they made some bets, and I thought at the time, and I'll own it, and I'll stand by it, I thought they were smart bets because they basically paid players to come in, prove themselves, and be flipped for some prospect return. I'm talking about Nelson Cruz. I'm talking about Steve Cishek, Cesar Hernandez, Sean Doolittle, and then some others. And just about everything that could go wrong in those bets has. And that also materially affects your results, your record, your day-to-day, your runs average, whatever it may be. Because not only are those guys supposed to be trade bait, for lack of a better term, they're also supposed to be good to some degree. And like Cesar Hernandez this time last year had 19 homers. Mm-hmm. He has zero. It's like that's not unbelievable. It's not 11. It's yeah, right. It's not 11. It's not 5. It's literally zero. And Nelson Cruz is hitting for less power than he ever has. And you have to think that eventually at his age that was going to happen. But the fact that it happened this season in the year the Nationals basically paid $15 million for a prospect return. Because last year this time, the Minnesota Twins got their opening day starter for the next spring with Nelson Cruz. So you're looking and you're saying, I think that's worth $15 million. 6 years of team control of a young pitcher who could give me, you know, could be a third starter down the line. That's worth $15 million investment for one season. Yeah. I mean, I'm not even sure there's a market for him.
So do you think...
And then Sean Doolittle comes out. Yeah, you can just go on and on. I mean, with every guy, it's just the worst thing happened, basically.
So let's assume Soto's going. Bell's got to go. I would assume that deal happens. Maybe it happens with Soto, maybe not. I would think Cesar Hernandez has got to be a piece that people are kind of looking at. People have talked about Carl Edwards Jr. I've heard his name thrown out there. I mean, how many? I mean, they traded the young kid yesterday. Who did they trade?
They made a little deal.
Adrianza, yeah. They traded him to for the 29th top prospect in the Braves organization, by the way, Trey Harris. So how many guys do you think will go today? You think it's more than three? Less than three? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think if Soto goes, then you have Bell. And then Edwards makes sense to me. And then I think Victor Arano could sneak in. He hasn't been healthy, but when he's healthy, he's been pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cishek kind of eats innings. And if you need a swing arm, a veteran in your bullpen, you might just get him. Why not? I mean, it's like, you know, with someone like Trey Harris or someone like Lane Thomas, the last deadline, teams will just flip guys that they are going to probably let go of anyway.
Yeah,
and I think on this end, it's like, oh my God, they got Lane Thomas for John Lester, and it's like, well, they're going to DFA Lane Thomas the next day, so you might as well get a veteran lefty who can eat some innings for him because you're going to get nothing when you let him go, right? So we could see some deals like that at the 11th hour where teams say, wait, we still don't have that righty reliever, we still don't have that guy who throws a hard slider against lefties, or whatever it may be, and then we say, okay, pick up the phone, call the Nats, get Carl Edwards, get Victor Arano, and then we just see these quick deals come together where it's basically like Mike Rizzo saying, what are you going to give me? This guy, okay, boom. You know, like, I don't think it's that simple, but I think it's close with some of those players. So I think Hernandez is going to be a tough market just because there's been no power and really, really little production at the plate, and he really is only a second baseman at this point of his career. Adrianza made more sense in a deal like that because he plays a lot of positions, even though he hasn't hit. So it's, again, like, a lot of guys have played themselves out of the market, and I think Cruz is interesting too. Like, is there a landing spot for a guy where in most seasons, like, 15 teams don't have a DH and need right-handed bats off the bench for pinch hitting purposes? Teams don't even need that anymore. Everyone's employing a DH, and bench bats are less, you know, less useful because there's no pitcher spot. So it's just a weird market and a bad time for him to just go so far, you know, just take such a downturn.
I got to ask you about Corbin. I feel bad for the guy because you can see it on his face. He knows he sucks. I don't know. I don't know where he hit the brick wall, but he hit it face first. He leads the entire league, all of Major League Baseball, in losses, ERA for a starter, hits allowed, and I believe whip. I could be wrong on the whip, but he's last in all of those major categories for a starter. You know, he couldn't get out of the first inning, his last start in L.A. Last night he was terrible. Maybe he just needs a change of scenery. I don't know. He was throwing 95. His slider was still biting. Maybe he just needs to get out of Washington. But the problem is, I don't know if Rizzo can move him with that contract. What do you think? Is Corbin a possible trade piece?
I think it's only if you're tacking him on to something like a Soto deal.
I don't think
you can move him independently unless you're eating most of the money. And at that point, kind of that's why move him. Because I think to some degree, and I hate him even saying this, but on a rebuilding team that loses a lot of games, one thing you can say about Patrick Corbin, and it wasn't the case in L.A. last week, so I could eat my words there, is that he's actually been pretty reliable at eating innings. And there's actually a safety hazard with guys like Yoan Adone or some of these younger guys that come up and throw two innings in the middle of a series, in the middle of a five-game stretch, you know, whatever it may be. Corbin pretty reliably has been healthy, and he's able to throw a lot of pitches. He's kind of a rubber arm. So I'm not saying you want to keep doing what you're doing with him because there are times when he has to come out in the second inning, the third inning, and that's bad. But overall, like, I can think of worse pitchers, I can, for a rebuilding team that isn't really trying to win right now, only because having someone who reliably throws five, even six innings, even when they give up four or five runs on a bad team, is actually somewhat quasi-valuable. It's not worth $24 million, but you kind of need someone to take the burden off the bullpen sometimes, and I actually think he mostly does that. So I don't see why you give him up for nothing. But if you can sort of offload his whole contract and free up your books there, then you do it. But I don't think it's a situation where they should, like, DFA him or release him because, like, they're not – the team's not built to win anyway. So it's not – there's really no downside if he's going to give you innings for the most part. There is some value there.
Gotcha.
I know that's a hard sell.
Yeah, it kind of is, but I'll go with it.
Jesse, Mike Rizzo's legacy here should be that he assembled the team that won the World Series in 2019. But does it pivot to, well, he's the guy that traded Juan Soto away if that's ultimately what happens today or during the offseason?
I just mostly from what I've seen from fans and heard from fans is I think the legacy element of Soto gets more attached to ownership,
okay.
Which unfair or not, I think that the equation is going to not be we're angry that you made this sort of quote unquote baseball decision. It's going to be we're angry that you didn't sign him. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so
yes.
I think it more falls. I think the rhetoric has more tilted that way, where it doesn't seem like Rizzo's necessarily on the hook because I think what the public framing is and the belief is that he's doing this because his hands are tied because they're not able to make him an offer that he'll sign, which could again be unfair to the Lerner family because one could argue that everything Soto said in the last 3 years is that he wants to be a free agent. So now if that's what he's saying publicly and that's what he's doing with his actions in negotiations with a contract extension, then you'd say then it's either no one's fault because Mike's potentially making a good business decision and the Lerner's tried, or you say it's the front office's fault, quote unquote, because they're the ones actually making the decision to trade him. Instead of, keeping him, building around him, then taking their shot in free agency, whatever it may be. So I think, getting to this point of the sell-off back-to-back summers and the potential Juan Soto trade is probably more of a stain on a legacy, I would say, for front office than actually doing the Juan Soto trade.
Yeah.
That's how I would see it.
All right, so, I mean, if the Dodgers pull off something and Rizzo sends him to L.A., can you imagine that lineup? With Mookie, with Trey, with yeah. Freeman, with Soto, with Lux. You know, Muncy can't hit his way out of paper bag, but he still has power. I mean, that would be absurd.
Yep.
I just don't see it going to the Dodgers. I think if he goes anywhere, it'll be San Diego or St. Louis. So you're saying San Diego.
Yeah, and I think the best situation for the Nationals today is for Andrew Freeman to look at this and say, I can't let him go to the Dodgers or the Padres. And then Major Pro to say, I can't let him go to the Dodgers.
Right.
And if you're in an NL West bidding war with two teams that have shown the ability to make huge trades with their farm system, they're going to mortgage, the long-term future to some degree for the present gains. Like that's your best case and division rivals who are going, head to head down the stretch. And you're going to maybe play each other in the playoffs. Like you want that. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine that lineup with those guys, with Freeman, Turner, Betts, and Soto. It seems like a video game.
Yeah, it's an all-star team.
It's an all-star team.
It's a National League all-star team. That's what it is, yeah.
It is. And then, right now it seems like there's the most momentum toward the Padres, but I think Rizzo would love if that irked the Dodgers into making some big offers too.
All right.
Jesse, we're going to let you run. We know you'll be busy today with the trade deadline coming up at 6 p.m. Thanks again. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Yep. That's Jesse Dougherty, covers the Nationals for the Washington Post. And don't forget, you want to keep it here all day on 106.7 The Fan for the latest Juan Soto breaking trade rumors, if any. Coming up next, we'll give you a chance to win Zach Brown Band tickets, and we'll get into Cakes' entertainment page next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.